Well, welcome to the Epic Podcast, episode 13, and today's Judges 13 to 17. Today we complete a powerful three-part series in which we were getting to know the judges of Israel and how God used them to deliver his people when they fell into sin and turned their hearts away from him. Before I begin, I would just like to take a moment to reflect on what we have heard so far. Many of you might have been unsettled by the sheer gore and violence of the stories in the last two episodes. But I urge you to see them in context. They are no different really to what we experience worldwide today. Solomon wisely said, "What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun." Bad things happen to good people, and people make bad choices that have consequences. We live in a broken world that is ruled by the prince of darkness for the moment. God is still in control, and he is always with us in the thick of our battles, purposefully strengthening us and guiding us to overcome the evil one until we are unstoppable. God designed a perfect blueprint for humanity as much as he did for us individually. These stories reveal the chaos that unfolds when we turn away from God. They remind us, in our own strength, we are powerless to overcome our enemies. We need God's divine intervention. We need Jesus. Our choices carry consequences, not just for us individually, but also for others. God does not force us to be obedient. Rather, he calls us to choose him because we genuinely love him. Moses reminds us in Deuteronomy, "I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life, that you and your offspring may live." Nothing we go through surprises God. He is never caught off guard. According to Philippians 2, verse 3, he is working in us to will and to act according to his good purpose. And Romans 8:28 reminds us, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." This scripture encourages us because Jesus has made it possible to work out every detail of our lives towards a good outcome for our benefit, not just in this life, but in the context of eternity. Folks, our lives really do have a happy ending. In the previous two episodes of this three-part story of Judges, we learned to recognize the enemy we are up against and fight with the weapons God gave us through the story of each judge. This episode is about a judge named Samson, but it unfolds a little differently. This story is not so much about fighting the Philistines, but more about recognizing how God uses adversary and difficult circumstances to train us, stretch us, and make us stronger by increasing the level of our battles, increasing the size of the giants until we are victorious in having renewed our minds and see everything from heaven's perspective. Through one experience after another, God came alongside Samson and gave him more and more to overcome. God developed his strength and his might, continually raising the bar and increasing the size of his victory. Samson was a sinner who made bad choices and allowed his heart to rule his actions, a man who rejected his calling and destiny as a Nazarite, set apart for God, by God. And yet God chose him to deliver Israel from the Philistines, who had oppressed them for 40 years. God never abandoned him, but remained committed to his plan. He did not leave him ill-equipped for the task, but filled him with his spirit and fought alongside him, all the while increasing his strength until nothing could stop Samson. We will still explore the Philistines and their influence in our lives, but first let's dive into this incredible story. Samson's journey takes place during the 325-year period following Joshua's death, just before Samuel is raised up as the last judge and priest to intercede against the Philistines and contend for God's presence to come back to Israel. This story begins with a barren womb, as so much of God's story starts with a womb that is empty and desiring to birth purpose. One day the wife of Manoah, a man from the tribe of Dan, was working in the fields as she did every day. She was barren, and both her and Manoah had long given up their dream of a child. An angel of the Lord appeared to her in the field and said to her, "You are sterile and childless, but you are going to conceive and have a son. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines." Then he left her with a list of instructions. She was not to drink any wine or fermented drink, nor was she to eat anything unclean. She was not to shave any of the boy's hair, because he was to be a Nazarite, and he had to be set apart and consecrated to the Lord. A Nazarite was someone who took a special vow of dedication to God. This sets the stage for a journey filled with divine strength, human weakness, and a clash between destiny and desire. Manoah's wife ran home to tell her husband she had seen an angel and all that the angel had told her. I'm sure he was skeptical, because he immediately prayed and asked God to send the man again to teach him how to bring up this boy, as if he didn't take her word for it. God heard him and sent the angel out to the field where his wife was working, but Manoah was not with her, so she had to go home to call him. When he saw the man, he asked, "When your words are fulfilled, what is to be the rule that governs the boy's life and work?" The angel repeated what he had said to Manoah's wife, and that she must do everything he had commanded her. Manoah had not yet realized the man was an angel. He wanted to know more about him, and he tried to invite him to stay for a while, but the angel declined. He instructed Manoah to rather make a burnt offering to the Lord. Manoah was petrified when he saw the man ascend to heaven in the flame of the offering. He now saw that it was an angel, but his wife reassured him that if the Lord had meant to kill them, he would have. 9 months later, Samson was born. The Lord blessed him, and his spirit began to stir him. Manoah and his wife believed the prophetic word that Samson would begin delivering Israel from the Philistines. So like any faithful family, they prayed over his future. They raised him with godly values and principles, shaping his heart and mind for the destiny set before him. Even though Samson grew up knowing the Lord and knowing there was a call on his life, his strength and striking appearance soon drew him into a web of distraction and wayward thinking. One day, his father sent him to Timnah, a nearby Philistine city, to gather supplies for the farm. While there, Samson fell for a Philistine woman. Knowing full well this was against everything he had been taught and what his parents would have wanted, he still returned home and insisted that his father get her for him as a wife. Can you imagine their reaction? This was God's promised child. God had gone to great lengths to instruct them exactly how to bring him up. He was supposed to be a Nazarite, for goodness sake. His parents must have been beside themselves. They begged him to choose a more suitable wife from among his own people. But Samson had a mind of his own, and it was already made up. He wanted that Philistine woman. What his parents did not know was that God was working behind the scenes, setting up the circumstances and using Samson's choices to create an opportunity to face the Philistines. Samson took his family to meet her. On their way, while they were a little ahead of him, a young lion came roaring out of nowhere to attack him. The Spirit of the Lord filled him with supernatural strength as he grabbed the beast with his bare hands and tore it apart effortlessly. I'm sure his own strength surprised him, since he chose not to tell his parents about the incident. Imagine what your family and friends might think if you told them you had superpowers. Once they arrived in Timnah, the contract was sealed by his parents and the marriage date was set, so he returned home with his family to prepare. Later, when he went back to marry her, he came across the lion's carcass, the one he had killed. It was still lying where he had left it. A swarm of bees had built a hive in it and were making honey. He scooped the honey up, ate some, and when he joined his parents, he offered them some, but he never told them where he got it. When it was time to celebrate the wedding feast, it was custom for the bridegroom to be assigned 30 companions, best men, so to speak. Samson wanted to show off to the men, so he challenged them with a riddle, promising them 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes if they could solve it within 7 days. If they failed, they would owe him the same. This was the riddle. Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. For 3 days, the men struggled to solve it. Samson's wedding feast took a dramatic turn, leading to betrayal, rage, and a chain of violent events that would shape his fate. On the fourth day, they pressured Samson's wife, threatening her and her family if she didn't get the answer out of him. She begged Samson, accusing him of not loving her because he wouldn't tell her the answer. She wept throughout the feast, pressing him, until on the seventh day, he finally revealed it. She immediately betrayed him and gave away the answer. Needless to say, Samson was furious when he found out. Overcome with anger, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him and he went to Ashkelon, a large Philistine city and stronghold. There he struck down 30 Philistine men, taking their garments to settle his debt. When he eventually returned for his wife, she had been given to his friend, one of the 30 men who had accompanied him at the wedding. Can you believe the audacity of his father-in-law? He reminds me of evil Uncle Laban, who tricked Jacob into marrying the wrong sister. Samson went back to live with his parents, probably quite ashamed, as he was the one who had insisted on marrying her. After a while, he couldn't handle it. He went back to Timnah, and he was going to take what belonged to him. When he got to her room, her father wouldn't let him go in, and he offered Samson her younger sister, supposedly more attractive. Samson said to them, "This time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them." So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. He fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burnt up the shocks and standing grain, together with the vineyards and the olive groves. When the Philistines asked, "Who did this?" they were told, "Samson, the Timnite son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion." The Philistines wasted no time in retaliating and burnt her and her father to death. Samson was livid. He would not stop until he got his revenge. He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. In this way, his victory and defeating the Philistines went from 30 to many of them. After that, he went and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam in Judah, where no Philistine could find him. In the meantime, the Philistines moved their camps into Judah, spreading themselves out amongst the Israelites. The Israelites from Judah asked them, "Why are you coming to fight against us?" They had heard rumors of Samson hiding there, so they said, "We have come to take Samson prisoner, to do to him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Etam and said to Samson, "Don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us?" He defended himself and said, "I merely did to them what they did to me." But they wouldn't have it. There was no way they were going to put themselves in danger to rescue one of their own. They had no faith in their ability to fight against the Philistines. And besides, Samson made his own choices, didn't he? Folks, think about this. The tribe of Judah gathered 3,000 men to negotiate with Samson. So intimidating was his reputation of supernatural strength. Then the men of Judah insisted, "We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines." Goodness, instead of supporting him, backing him up, they chose rather to sell him out because they had no faith to fight. Samson humored them because by now he knew that there was no way that they could hold him down. So he said, "Swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves." They agreed they would only tie him up and hand him over to them. They promised not to kill him. So they bound him with 2 new ropes and led him up from the rock. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came towards him, shouting and ready to take him captive. The Spirit of the Lord strengthened him, and the ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Samson reached for a jawbone of a donkey and struck down 1,000 Philistines with it. His victory in defeating the Philistines increased from 30 to many, and now to 1,000 men. Can you see what God is doing here? Every battle against the Philistines increases Samson's ability to defeat more Philistines in the next. The battle left Samson very thirsty, just as our battles drain us emotionally and physically. Samson said to the Lord, "You have given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" Then God opened up the hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned, and he was revived. So the spring was called En Hakkore. Sometime after that, Samson traveled to Gaza, another Philistine stronghold and city. He obviously had a wandering eye for beautiful women, because he found a Philistine prostitute and went to spend the night with her. We would think that knowing the calling on his life and having experienced God's empowerment, this would be the furthest thing from his mind. Besides, how could he call on God while living this wayward life and giving into temptation? Nevertheless, God would see it through and accomplish his purpose. When the people of Gaza found out Samson was there, they surrounded the place and waited all night long at the city gate, plotting to kill him at dawn. Samson, however, left her room in the middle of the night, took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with their posts, and tore them loose. He lifted them to his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that faced Hebron. This was an incredible distance. Hebron is about 60 kilometers or 37 miles from Gaza. Folks, these city gates were colossal and heavy, a feat truly accomplished through supernatural strength. Ancient city gates were massive, often reinforced with wood, iron bars, and stone thresholds. They were a symbol of a city's strength and security. By removing them, Samson humiliated the Philistines and demonstrated that their defenses were useless against him. Samson's reputation spread like wildfire. No one had ever seen such a thing. The Philistines were more determined than ever to capture him and strip him of his strength. Samson traveled from there to the valley of Sorek. Once again, his lust for woman drew him into the web of a beautiful woman called Delilah. Little did he know that Delilah had no scruples. She was a woman with ambition and used her seductive charms to get what she wanted. The leaders of the five main cities of the Philistines approached her and said, "See if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him, so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver." That was a fine sum of money, and she had no problem selling him out. So with all her seductive charm, Delilah said to Samson, "Tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued." He said, "If anyone ties me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, I'll become as weak as any other man." So she called the Philistine leaders, and together they set a trap. When Samson fell asleep, they tied him up. She called out to Samson, but he snapped the 7 fresh thongs just like that. She said to him, "You have made a fool of me. You lied to me. Come now, tell me how you can be tied up." Once again, he humored her and lied. "If anyone ties me securely with new ropes that have never been used, I'll become as weak as any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and tied him up. She called to him, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." But he snapped the ropes off his arms as if they were threads. She was furious. "All this time you have been making a fool of me and lying to me. Now, come on, tell me how you can be tied." And once again he lied. "If you weave the 7 braids of my head into the fabric on the loom and tighten it with a pin, I'll become as weak as any other man." When she realized he had deceived her again, she resorted to manipulation. "How can you say you love me if you won't confide in me?" Then she relentlessly nagged him day after day until he was sick to death of it. Eventually he gave up and told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head, because I have been a Nazarite, dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me, and I would become as weak as any other man." Then she sent for the Philistine rulers to return with their money. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off his hair. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." When he woke up, he did not know that the Lord had left him, and he had no strength to break free. Then the Philistines grabbed him, shackled him, gouged out his eyes, and took him down to the prison in Gaza. When they arrived there, they bound him to a grindstone and put him to work. There he was left to mindlessly push and rotate a stone, round and round, day in and day out. Let's just picture this for a minute. Samson is now blind. There is nothing to distract him. He is captive and bound to a grindstone with nowhere to go. All the time in the world to think about his life and the past. Hours to remember and fellowship with his Lord. I am sure he talked to God about everything. He might have mulled over regrets, asked God to forgive him. I believe he found peace in this sanctuary with his Heavenly Father and resolved that if he ever had the opportunity, God would give him the strength to get the job done and deliver Israel once and for all, since God had promised this honor to him. The Philistine rulers gathered in their temple to Dagon for a huge celebration. They wanted to thank Dagon for helping them subdue Samson, the once mighty warrior of Israel and the biggest bane of their existence. They were so high in spirits and summoned the gods to bring Samson to them so that they could be entertained. They wanted to make a mockery of him. Samson was dragged into the temple and instructed to perform. Even though they thought he had lost his strength, I'm sure they wanted to marvel at his physique and humiliate him at the same time. He did not resist and gave them what they wanted while seeking an opportunity. He had nothing to lose. He had made mistakes, but now he had no regrets, just righteous anger. He asked the young man assisting him to place him between the two pillars. All those weeks of grinding with nothing to see, nothing to distract him, kept him focused on God and the mission. His hair had grown back, but he didn't really rely on that anymore, so he turned to his Father in heaven. Even though there was no New Testament scriptures to quote at that time, I believe he knew it in his heart. Matthew 16 says, "For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it." A final prayer, a plea for strength, one last time. With a deep cry that would have raised the dead, he mustered all the strength and let God do the rest. The pillars began to crack, and the mighty structure collapsed, crushing them all, the Philistine leaders and the thousands of Philistines gathered there. Samson's death was not just vengeance. It was an act of submission to God's will. In his weakness, he fulfilled his greatest purpose. His family later retrieved his body, laying him to rest in the land of his ancestors, marking the end of the 20th year of leading Israel. Let us look at who these Philistines were, and how did they reflect spiritual battles we face today? Well, once again we have to go back to Noah and his three sons, Japheth, Ham, and Shem. Ham shamed his father when he was drunk, and there already we begin to pick up the characters of the Philistines, since they come from Ham's son Mizraim, also known as Egypt. In Exodus 13:17, we are told that God did not lead the Israelites through Philistine territory, even though it was a shorter route, because he knew they might turn back to Egypt if they faced war. Even God knew that this was a formidable nation. The Philistines were more than just an enemy on the battlefield. They were a force of dominance, a culture of opposition, and a relentless challenge to the people of God. Their cities, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, Gath, and Gaza, formed the stronghold of ancient Philistia, giving them the upper hand in warfare. Their advanced technology and mastery of iron gave them power, but their true influence lay beyond weapons. It was in the way they controlled narratives, culture, and even destinies. They represent everything that is opposite to God. They didn't just fight Israel, they fought God's purpose. Time and time again they sought to take what belonged to God's chosen ones, the wells of Abraham, the favor of Isaac, and even the wives of the patriarchs. Their strategy was simple: steal, manipulate, and control. In Samuel's story, they steal the Ark of the Covenant. They steal God's presence. In David's story, they sent the giant Goliath to intimidate Israel for 40 days. Samson's life embodied the relentless attack of the Philistines. They didn't just want to defeat him. They wanted to strip him of his God-given strength. When they couldn't conquer him in battle, they turned to a different tactic: deception and playing on his weakness, his love for women. They paid Delilah to uncover the secret of his power, much like how Samson's wife was pressured to expose his riddle at the wedding. This enemy always seeks a way in. When they finally took him down, they didn't stop at binding him in bronze shackles. They went further. They gouged out his eyes, leaving him weak and blind. But even in his darkness, God was still at work. When the enemy thinks he has won, God always holds the trump card. The battle of the Philistines didn't end with Samson. The tactics may have changed, but the enemy still seeks to weaken, distract, and control. And here's the reality. We still face modern-day Philistines. They don't come with swords and chariots, but with ideologies, systems, and voices that attempt to control how we think, what we believe, and how we live. Culture shapes our mindsets, telling us what is acceptable, redefining truth and pushing faith aside. Governments and powers set laws for us that regulate our freedom, sometimes at the cost of our convictions. Technology and media influence how we process the world, dictating what we see and believe and controlling where we find our value and our identity. God doesn't discard flawed warriors. He trains them. Like a personal trainer, he pushes the bar higher, building our endurance, our wisdom, and our spiritual power. The battle intensifies, but so does our strength. And the more we lean into him, the more unstoppable we become. We have to know the enemy will not take it sitting down, but we don't fight alone. We have the Spirit of God, and with him, we are equipped for every battle. Samson fell, but in the end, he took down more enemies in his death than he ever did in his life. His story reminds us that even when we feel broken, used, or defeated, God's purpose will still prevail. Your battle is not over. Your strength is growing. And just like Samson, your greatest victory might still be ahead. As I have reflected on my own journey, I have seen the advantage of being in my deep 50s. Unlike my kids, who still have to experience life and fight Philistines, I have already built a history with the Lord. We go way back. I have a bird's eye view of every setback, every intimidating and crushing moment, and I can see the hand of the Lord in it all. Every challenge pushed me into more seeking, more learning, and more skills. Every closed door opened to a richer encounter and a treasure of tools and knowledge I would never have imagined for myself, this podcast series being one of them. The last part of the book of Judges covers two horrific stories regarding the moral decline of Israel. I decided not to include them. They are so disturbing I cannot bring myself to repeat them, but they are worthy of reading yourself to know for yourself how compromised the priests of Israel had become, not to mention the absolute moral degradation of the Benjamites, the youngest of the 12 tribes of Israel. Their extreme promiscuousness, immorality, and violence nearly cost them their extinction. All I can say is that the evidence pointed to Israel's desperate need for a savior. Next episode, we embark on the beautiful redemptive journey of Ruth, a tale of loss, loyalty, and divine restoration. A woman from Judah, stripped of everything she once had, finds herself stranded in a foreign land, facing an uncertain future. With nothing left, she must find a way to survive. By her side stands Ruth, her Moabite daughter-in-law, faced with an agonizing choice: return to her people and the life she's always known, or sacrifice everything to follow Naomi and serve the God of Israel. Separated by culture and belief, yet bound by love and devotion, their journey is one of trials and unwavering faith. But the story does not end with their suffering. God wraps himself around them, redeeming not just their circumstances, but weaving them into his grand plan, as he continues to establish the bloodline of his son Jesus through them. Well, folks, we'll have to wait till next week to find out. Be sure to like and subscribe to the YouTube channel to keep up to date with new episodes. And also feel free to share. Let us work together to spread God's story and see the manifold wisdom of our Lord as he reveals his blueprint for the world. My book, The Epic, A Chronological and Visual Guide Through the Old Testament, as well as my first book, Crossing the Jordan River, Stepping into Destiny, is available from Takealot SA. You can log on to my website for more information, that is intuitiveprophetic.art.co.za. And if you would like your own hardcover, high-quality digital copy, you can email me at michellenethlingart@gmail.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also follow me on Instagram, michellenethlingart.